It's showtime!
Get up! I want everybody up! Get out of your seats and get on your feet! Welcome to Where Rock Meets Roll, Heavy Beats Metal, and Out Meet Law. Ladies and gentlemen, let them hear you!
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Midwest Autosports Podcast. My name is Lauren Kelly. I'm the founder of Midwest Autosports.
And I am Will Garretts, the leech of Midwest Autosports.
That's still not true. as always, we're sponsored by Pedal Down Promotions. They are a full-service public relations, and media services company devoted to helping businesses, organizations, civic groups, sports teams, and book authors effectively communicate with targeted audiences through a diverse array of promotional strategies and methods, including press releases, newsletters, profile and feature articles, website and social media content development, printed media, marketing materials, editing and layout, graphic design, and book publishing services. For more information on how Pedal Down Promotions can become your fast-track connection to success, contact Jeff Pedersen by email at pedaldownpromotions@gmail.com or visit www.pedaldownpromo.com. And Will, do you want to run us down the episode for today?
Yeah, today on the show, we're going to go over news, as always, split up into asphalt and dirt sections. Then we're also going to talk about our future winners, the Sagefruit Winner Circle.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to go up to upcoming races. And I think we're going to go into our interview, which is with Harley White this year.
This year. But yeah. It's also happening today.
More importantly, it's happening today.
Yes. And then we'll wrap it up with some new power rankings in two of our three power ranking things. We've kind of gone a while in between Dirt Kings power rankings, but we'll have some more. We'll have some more power rankings of those after this week,
and a little bit of a format change for us. We're no longer going to be talking about the local track results. We're going to be sticking to the national and regional touring series, just to kind of speed up the process. Our episodes have been getting a little long, and so we're going to move that over to our Facebook post.
And Twitter. And follow us on Twitter. I haven't said that on the podcast yet, that we now have a Twitter. But yeah, it's just at @MAS_Autosports. And we'll be posting pretty much everything to both platforms. The only thing that's going to be Twitter exclusive is during race updates.
Yeah, Twitter's just a lot better for updates throughout the nights. It's in reverse chronological order, so you can just refresh and see the most recent result.
Mm-hmm.
But as for the news...
Yeah, let's get this ad read out of the way.
Speaking of Midwest Autosport news, you have anything you want to talk about?
Like what?
Team MAS?
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. So we're starting basically hashtag Team MAS is going to be basically a group of drivers that work with myself and Will and everybody else here at Midwest Autosports, along with some great sponsors. And it's basically, we basically run all your social media stuff. So... We've got a contract up and everything. It's on our Facebook page. All the information's there. I'm going to pin it to our Twitter page as well here after I'm done recording this podcast. And we've already got one driver on. Sean Rahal has come on to be part of Team MAS, as well as obviously Will here and Trevor Frank. So they're all of their social media stuff, and we're doing press releases and stuff, and you'll have seen that earlier this week. All those press releases will be written by us and by me more specifically, I guess. And it's been a lot of fun so far. I'm excited to get working on it. We've got another couple drivers interested, one from way up north, and we've got another couple that are more from the area. And it's very, very exciting. So that's kind of our news. And then we're going to go on to our actual news for everybody else, presented by Recognition Race Products. On warm summer nights, as the sun goes down and the sound of revving engines fills the air, the passion for racing carries an energy all on its own. We offer everything drivers need to take that passion to the winner's circle with the most complete selection of parts, gear, and tools available. Recognition Race Products is your local source featuring products from over 630 of the world's leading manufacturers. We promise to keep you on the cutting edge of the racing industry. Recognition Race Products, we make it easy. Visit us online at go2rrp.com or at our store at 118 Highland Avenue in Plymouth, Wisconsin. And speaking of great companies, I had the pleasure this last week to get to meet Matt Bull, who is one of the head honchos over at Liquid Nitro Energy Drink, Kick-Ass Beef Jerky, and what was the other one? Quality Freight Rate?
Yep.
And he's been, you know, we're trying to start to work with him in, on business side of things, but just on the normal side, he's a great guy. And he hooked me up with an absolute, I think it was about two shoeboxes worth full of Kick-Ass Beef Jerky and beef sticks. And they're gone. I got them last week. I got them home last week, Thursday morning, and they're just gone. So, Will, you want to start us out with some asphalt news here?
So, as always, we're going to talk about the asphalt stuff, working our way from the road course all the way to the dirt holes. And for F1 stuff, the biggest kind of news of the week was the FIA, the sanctioning body for Formula 1. They handed a 15 manufacturer point penalty and a $400,000 dollar, or was it pound?
Well, it might have been pounds. I don't know. Whatever unit they use.
A generally they hand out fines in U.S. dollars because that's like the standard for
currency.
It, I think it's the international standard for currency.
Mm-hmm.
But they kind of distribute
it's transferred it.
They distribute it to each team in British pounds or wherever they're located. I know there's Italian teams in French.
Austrian as well, Red Bull.
Yep.
But yeah, $400,000 fine. I mean, that's pretty serious. I mean, for an F1 team, it's not really that much. But for Racing Point, I mean, it kind of is. But basically, that was for copying the Mercedes. You know, we call it the pink Merc or the pink Mercedes or whatever you want to call it. But really, this was specifically about the brake ducts.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we think the normal car looks pretty similar, but if you look at the two pictures of the brake ducts side by side, they're exactly the same. And however, the part's legal, so they have to still allow them to use it for the rest of the 2020 season. So they get that hefty penalty, but they're still a legal car.
And the good thing is the drivers don't get any point penalties.
Right. Well, yeah, it's not the driver's fault. But you know, this is kind of interesting because it's like third time's a charge for Renault, or third time is a charm for Renault.
They're probably thinking, yeah, we got one.
Well, no, because apparently this actually just came out this morning. Every single other F1 team is or has filed an appeal to this penalty, basically saying they think it wasn't harsh enough.
I don't know. I watched a video, but I think it's. I also probably don't think it's harsh enough. I know they had, I watched a video on this a couple days ago, maybe yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that the video, I forget who it was by, some F1 journalist.
Will Buxton?
No, I don't think so.
She put one out that was pretty good.
I guess, so when this was a unlisted part, when you could share between CAD files between teams,
yep.
They used this CAD file. And then they used it for last season, but they updated it throughout the season last year, and then they didn't like it, so they went back to this one like 3 days after it became an unlisted or a listed part.
Oh.
So just it was like a 3-day window where if they would have done it 3 days or 4 days sooner,
it would have been
completely fine.
But because it's, wow.
It was a listed part.
Right.
Which, for those of you that don't, no, a listed part is a part that you cannot share no matter what. An unlisted part, you can share between teams.
You can just like buy engines. Them off the market, yeah.
I think you can actually buy brakes, but it's the brake ducts.
It's the brake duct, yeah. The actual cooling system for the brakes. That was the problem on Racing Point's car. And it's just, it's, I don't know. It's kind of interesting just because Racing Point is like the second best car this year. You know, you could say Red Bull is, but clearly I think it's just Max Verstappen's just that good. But Racing Point, I think, is the second best overall car. And their last year's, they literally, now and this kind of confirms it, that their last year's Mercedes. I mean, there's not a whole lot of difference between the two cars.
And I'm completely fine with them copying the car. They did not get any CAD files for it. They didn't get any outside help from it. What they did is they took hundreds of thousands of pictures of the car, and then they reverse engineered it, and they put it in a wind tunnel based on their best guess and refined it like that.
And they also used bigger scale models of the car to get the like actual dimensions between, you know, certain points on the car correct. And they would literally, like, let's say you take an 8 scale model and they would literally just multiply it by 8 mm-hmm. and then use it on the real car. That's genius, you know, stuff like that. So that's those kind of things, it's a different kind of innovation, which is also cool to see. Also, this was kind of cool, Nico Hulkenberg was back on the grid. He's been considered one of the better drivers on the grid for a long time and just kind of really underrated because he was always stuck at kind of midfield teams. But then he got stuck without a ride last year just because of how everything, the silly season worked out with, you know, Lance Stroll's daddy coming in and buying the whole team and stuff like that. So all those things kind of worked out and he ended up without a ride. However, Sergio Perez, one of the Racing Point drivers, tested positive for coronavirus. And so he was out this last weekend. And so they called in Nico Hulkenberg to fill in for the last two weekends. The first weekend, he actually had to pull off on the opening lap because of some failure on the car. But now, this weekend, he got to show his full pace, qualified third by a large margin over Lance Stroll. I think he was about 7/10 in front of Lance, mm-hmm. which in F1 is an enormous amount of time. And then he was on track for a podium, actually. He would have gotten past Bottas. I don't know how we're going to pronounce that name. Bottas, the other Mercedes driver, Valtteri. And he was stripped of that podium because his team just made a poor strategy call, and he had to come in for tires with like four laps left. Mm. And the interesting thing, too, is both him and Sergio Perez are available for teams to sign next year. They're both technically free agents or whatever you want to call them.
And Sergio is on a hot seat, unfortunately.
Yep. Yeah.
Just because of, I don't know, silly season.
And, well, it sucks for him because he's at a team that's owned by his teammate's dad. So he's, you know, Sergio's been the guy at Force India for a long time, and then after they switched to Racing Point, it's been Lance is the guy now. He's their shoe-in. You know, when you're, you know.
You'd think that the guy who gets the results gets to stay.
But that's not how
it's just
works.
Not the way that it's going to work, or it looks like it's going to work. There's also talk of Sebastian Vettel coming over.
Yep. And, you know, when you think of all the guys that are available after this season, Hulkenberg, Perez, Vettel, you know, those guys are very, very good drivers and obviously have the caliber to get podiums at, you know, an upper caliber team. And it's, you know, I know Sebastian's been kind of off the eight ball this year, but
yeah, it's just a Ferrari thing.
He's also in just a really bad car. So, and then Valtteri Bottas is staying at Mercedes. He was confirmed for 2021, so that obviously that means that he will be teammates with Lewis Hamilton again next year.
Which that's a dynamic duo. It's going to be hard to...
They're going to milk those two for as long as they're worth.
Absolutely. That's a franchise team right mm-hmm. there. And they're going to ride out that success for as long as they can. But
yep.
NASCAR was in our neck of the woods there at Road America, at least the Xfinity Series.
Heck yeah.
And you have written here, road courses are greater than ovals.
Yes. We'll get to that.
But in the first stage, there was a 90-minute rain and lightning delay in the first stage, mm-hmm. and that we'll talk about that. It's 5 minutes from the Plymouth dirt track. We'll talk about that a little later because the rainstorm kind of flooded it.
Yeah, apparently the pits were pretty bad.
Yeah, we weren't allowed.
We'll get there later.
Yeah. Anyway, Josh Balicki, he
local
was on a
boy.
Pod.
Yeah,
he our was local our... guy. He lives in Brownsville.
Yeah.
I want to say. Yeah, he lives in Brownsville.
We were interviewing him, and he said he lived in Fond du Lac, which, I mean, Brownsville is close to Fond du Lac, but I was like, what?
Yeah, like, he could have came and just done this in person.
Yeah.
then Yeah, he led a few laps in the beginning of stage two.
Mm-hmm.
And he runs in the top 10 until the final lap, and he was taken out by the 11 car, which that was AJ Allmendinger.
Ross Chastain in the 11. AJ was in the 16. But yeah, he had a really, really good run. And I think it was kind of cool because you get all the guys, they talked about it on the broadcast, but you get guys like Josh Bilicki and other guys in that series that maybe aren't in the best rides. And they can't really show their pace on an oval because they don't have the horsepower to keep up with everybody else. But on a road course, it's all about, you know, your driving ability. And I know Road America
is also in the rain, yeah, too. So that even removes even further the equipment aspect of it.
And it was very clearly like the five best drivers were Austin Cindric, Josh Bilicki, AJ Allmendinger, and, you know, a few other guys that were just that much better at controlling the car than everyone else.
And you were saying that road courses are better than ovals.
So here's my thing with this. When you have a rain delay, I don't know, it just seemed like the rain delay wasn't that big of a deal. Like when I was just, you know, sitting there listening to it, I listened to it on the radio a little bit and then you know, watched the highlights. But it just didn't seem that like that big of a deal because you know the racing is going to be amazing. And on an oval, when it rain, well, and also you can race in the rain on road courses,
mm-hmm,
which I think is a huge plus.
They but just didn't race because there was lightning.
Right. Yep. When there's lightning, they don't have a choice. But with the ovals, they get like three drops of rain on the track. They have to stop, and then it's even longer because you have to sit out there and dry the track. Whereas a road course, it's, you know, it's big enough where you can go out and dry the track a little bit, but it does most of the drying on its own, and when it gets dry enough to a certain point, you can just go out and race on it anyways. So I don't know. I think for just racing, I just prefer road courses anyways. I mean, ovals are cool, but when it comes to NASCAR, especially watching those big stock cars just...
Yeah, cars that are not designed to race on a road course is great. But I'll split the middle with you. I really prefer the rovals.
Yeah.
Yes. The road course ovals, which they're going to this year. I'll also like to throw out that the Xfinity Series is a lot better than the Cup Series.
Yeah, I agree.
The cars just, they're way better.
They look better, I think.
And
I
they race better.
They race way
on
better.
On ovals and road courses.
Yep.
Anyway.
Yep.
A little more road course stuff for you. Yep. Antonio Felix da Costa wins the FIA Formula E Championship.
Yeah, this was cool. I followed Formula E a lot, like in the first season where they were racing, and he's always been stuck in like not great rides in that series. But then just recently he got up into the Tachita team, which is one of the better teams in there. And he was actually teamed up with Jean-Éric Vergne,
mm-hmm,
which you'll know that name from former Toro Rosso seat, I believe, in Formula One. However, Antonio Felix da Costa, it's a really crazy name, but he was never given, he had an F1 test, and he lost out on that test to Sebastian Bourdais, which everybody, you know, that didn't work out too well for Toro Rosso again, but then, you know, he was never given a chance in F1, and now he finally gets in a good, decent team in Formula E, and apparently he, like, dominated the championship. Like, he
good
won
for him.
Yeah, he won.
It's a very neat series. I like watching the development of the electric cars. I remember watching them start off and they would have two cars per race, but now they're down to just having one car race, and they can actually finish the whole distance on a single charge.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That's crazy.
And they
super competitive too, because all the cars are basically exactly the same. They just have like
a, I think they bit, can develop the power.
Like, they can develop their drivetrains. So they have to use the same amount of batteries and like the same amount, like in the same configuration and stuff. But the actual drivetrain where the power gets put to the actual wheels, that's what they can develop. So that's where you get some of the better teams and stuff like that. But for the most part, you could still get a guy in the back of the pack, have a little bit of luck and win. Whereas in F1, Williams aren't going to win a race this year. It's not, that's just not going to happen. So that's a cool series. But yeah, and then you've got some NASCAR news here underneath that.
Sure, but just one second here. I wanted to talk about how sometimes it's an advantage to be worse in the junior categories for Formula One to move up to F1.
Okay.
I watched a video, listened to a podcast. I don't know what it was. But Antonio Felix da Costa, he never got an F1 ride. And that might be just due to bad timing. But what I didn't know is that if you win the F2 championship, mm-hmm. you can't come back.
Right. Yeah, you have to go up.
You have to move up.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, Nyck de Vries won the championship and had nowhere to go.
Yeah, he had no... there were no open spots in F1, so he couldn't race.
So he was just out of luck, couldn't go on. So I thought that was kind of interesting to me, just that you can win an F2 championship and your career's almost over. Mm-hmm. That's nuts to me.
Yeah, I mean, guys like Lando Norris and George Russell, I mean, they got lucky. You know, they won the F2 championship or finished really well. And, yeah, they could have, you know, their first year in F2, they could have finished second and gone back. But they got lucky when they won the championship. There was an open spot. But, you know, with Nyck de Vries, he's been a McLaren development driver for a long time, and along with Renault as well. But then, obviously, those two teams are pretty much sealed for next year. McLaren, obviously, with Lando and now Daniel Ricciardo. So I get that, but at the same time, it makes sense because you've already proven that you're better than everyone else in the series, and it's not like somebody else is going to come in as a rookie and just beat you. So I get it. But, I think we can move on to some...
Yeah, let's go to some oval stuff here.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess one more piece of road course stuff. The 24 Hours of Le Mans is going to race behind closed doors, no fans. Ooh. No surprise, but they announced it this week.
Indy 500 as well.
Yeah, Indy 500 as well. That's why I'm talking here in person. I was supposed to report for duty this morning, Monday at 11 p.m.
I put a tab under that.
At the gate.
Sad William.
Yeah, sad William. So I will not be going to the Indy 500 or working at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway this year. They said they'd maybe invite me next year, but by then I'll probably have a full-time gig doing something. Who knows?
Indianapolis, probably.
We'll see.
All right, so NASCAR stuff. Let's wrap this up thing here.
Yeah, Christopher Bell, he's going to the Joe Gibbs Racing number 20. Eric Jones is out of a ride. This kind of came into play after Levine Family Racing shut down. That's the number 95 car with pro car sponsorship that you see out there. The coronavirus just took too much of a hit on Bob Levine's personal business
mm-hmm.
to be able to pay for his NASCAR habit.
And obviously that's where Christopher Bell is right now.
But Toyota is so dedicated to Bell that they opted to move Jones and have him come in.
Well, he won all the races for them in midgets, so...
Yeah.
I mean...
He was... Larson was the original Toyota development driver. Mm-hmm. He was like the guy. They lost him to Chevrolet, and they're not going to lose Bell. They'll mm-hmm. move heaven and earth for that kid.
Nope.
And speaking of dirt drivers in the NASCAR ranks, David Gravel made his truck debut, and he finished 10th.
In Michigan, too.
At Michigan.
Big old super speedway, and he did really well. I mean, it's cool. It's sad to see him get pulled out of the World of Outlaws, obviously, on one of their biggest weekends with the Ironman 55. But, you know, he only missed one night. Parker Price Miller filled in for him. And did really well. But, you know, to see a dirt guy go out there and in his first ever race on a big asphalt oval like that and get a top 10 in a car that he's only driven, you know, two or three times before, that shows me just how talented these top dirt drivers are. I think that's really awesome.
They're good.
Yeah.
They're definitely good. Sprint car drivers, midget, you saw that Tyler Reddick's in the Cup Series now. He's a dirt late model driver.
Yep.
He was on the Glass Case of Emotion podcast with, I can't even think of his name. Ryan Blaney. Why couldn't I think of Ryan Blaney's name? And he said that he doesn't feel like he's changed at all, like gotten any better as a driver.
Mm-hmm.
He just, dirt late models are just super tough to drive and win in. He didn't really win a lot in dirt late models, but it taught him the stuff that he needs to know to be good mm-hmm. on asphalt.
And that's going to transition us very nicely into our dirt news.
All right, let's talk about the Knottville Nationals coming up this week.
Will just came up with that on the spot before the podcast. So, yeah, the Knottville Nationals, or a.k.a. the one and only, which I really don't like that name.
I don't like that name either.
I think it's really dumb. They could have just called it something else at Knoxville. I don't know. But, yeah, it's basically just replacing the Knoxville Nationals. I think it's, what is it, two nights?
Three nights. Three Thursday, nights. Friday, Saturday.
Three nights instead of four nights, right? So, yeah, I mean, it's still Knoxville. It's still going to be some of the best sprint car drivers in the world.
It was kind of a you have to apply and then they accept you kind of thing, which they have to do what they got to do to keep the car numbers down. Otherwise, I think a lot more people would come.
Mm-hmm.
But looking forward to it. I'm sure Larson will be there, all the Outlaw guys.
The problem is that this was scheduled so late that none of our IRA regulars are going to be able to go compete because we have a point show this weekend at Fairbury in Illinois, and that's going to really put a dent in our car count just with that going on. But it's just the way the schedules fell because everything's been so messed up this year. That Fairbury date we had on the schedule before the season even started, so... it's just the way it is. We'll get our IRA regulars there. I'm sure some other guys will run it that couldn't get into the entry list for the one and only. But I do know that Scotty Thiel is going to go run the one and only.
He got in?
He did get in. Because he took this last weekend off completely to get ready for that race. So he'll be there. So he'll be representing the IRA. I don't think Bill Balog is going to go run that. He might just because he has enough points lead with the IRA that he can afford to, but I don't know. I'd like to see that 17B car rip around Fairbury. And then we've got some conundrums. I like that word that you put in there, Will. Conundrum.
Conundrum.
we've got that going on in the World of Outlaw Late Model Series. They had their big USA Nationals this last week up at Cedar Lake, which was awesome to have that huge event in Wisconsin. $50,000 to win. I mean, that's crazy. It'll make people do weird things. And Tyler Erd did some really weird things.
He did some really weird stuff.
So Bobby Pierce basically was coming up through the field. Tyler Erd slid up the racetrack in front of him, and Pierce just didn't get off the gas. And they kind of spun out. I really thought it was a racing deal.
I didn't see what caused it.
Erb just came up the track trying to get up to the cushion for the corner. And Pierce was already up there, and he had the momentum, and he just kind of...
So was Tyler Erb a lap car, or...
No, they were...
They're battling for the lead?
Battling for a position. It wasn't the lead, but it was, like, in the top five. And it's okay. 100... If you don't know, the USA Nationals is a 100-lap late model race.
Sure, okay.
So they... It was, like, you know, halfway through or something like that, you know, toward maybe about three-quarters of the way through the race. But in the top five, Tyler Erb comes up to try and make the corner. Bobby Pierce just has the momentum, and he just kind of gets underneath the back of him with, you know, late models have that slanted front end.
Mm-hmm.
So he just kind of picked up the rear end of the car, and the car just spun right down into the infield. But no damage to either car at all. None. And then Tyler Erb immediately spins the car around and then goes and basically parks his nose on Bobby Pierce's nose and then starts to do, like, I don't know, like burnouts in
he
front
of
him.
He got on the gas.
Yeah.
The cars were kind of overlapped each other after that.
Mm-hmm.
It was just weird. It was, I don't know.
Well, then Bobby Pierce's dad ran onto the track and tried to beat up Tyler Erb while Tyler was still in his car with the window net up. And then Tyler started to back away, and a World of Outlaws official reached inside the car to, like, try and get him to stop or whatever. And then Tyler, like, sped off and, like, ripped the official with him and dragged him for a few, you know, maybe 10, 15 yards. And the official finally came out. Apparently, the official needed a bunch of stitches. And there was a rumor that Tyler Erb spent the night in jail, and I don't think that that's true. I think he might be charged with something at some point, but, you know.
He got escorted off the premises is what I read.
Yeah, because they had to go outside of Cedar Lake to interview him after the races.
He also put up his nose off the late model up for sale.
Tyler Erb did.
Yeah, and all proceeds go to a charity of the buyer's choice.
And, you know, at first, I was completely on Bobby Pierce's side with this, just because I know Tyler Erb's kind of a hothead, just from things that I've heard and seen over the past few years watching late models, watching the bigger late model shows and stuff. But after listening to the interviews and listening to what everybody else who actually, like, religiously follows late model racing, apparently it's very much in Bobby Pierce's, like, driving style to do this kind of thing. Like, he just drives through people all the time.
Mm.
And it just seems like he'd done it to Tyler Erb one too many times, and Tyler finally got fed up and just wanted to kick his butt. And it was kind of funny. He said after the races, Tyler Erb, in an interview, he said if he wants to do it on the track or he wants to do it in a truck stop parking lot, like, wherever he wants to get down. And I was like, what? That was just really weird.
Yeah, weird.
Late model driver stuff. Late model drivers are weird, man. But yeah, that was pretty interesting. It happened basically right in our backyard, so that was cool.
Outlaw Kart Nationals, you were there.
Yeah, I was there. This was cool. First kind of experience with these little things. I mean, it's a 1/8 mile track and they average like 80 miles per hour.
They're fast.
That was redonkulous. I mean, that was just, it was the coolest thing. And the way that the track was laid out too, my announcer's box was literally on the front stretch. Like, legitimately, I could look down and see the carts going underneath me.
Hmm.
It was really cool. But yeah, it was amazing to me. Like, I didn't really know what to expect when I went up there, but Donnie Schatz was there both nights, wrenching for his niece's carts. Of course, they went 1-2 on the finale night in the junior wing class. And he was there. He went into victory lane, and apparently he stayed and signed some autographs and stuff like that, which was really
cool.
Yeah, nice guy. And then Travis Quapel, who, no offense, Travis, but just kind of a really mediocre NASCAR driver from Wisconsin.
He made a lot of Cup Series starts, though.
He was in there for a long time, just never really was in a good car. I think probably the best car he was on was on those Burger King cars, you know.
BK Racing.
Yeah. But his kids were there, and they both are wheelmen. Carson Quapel won from 10th on the grid in a 30-lap race that was split into two 15-lap segments. And if you've never seen an outlaw kart race, it's not exactly the easiest thing ever to just slide job your way up through the field. But he won in the 500 open class, which is the main class up there. $2,000 to win. He took that home. His brother, Caden Quapel, finished in second, who won the event last year because Carson had something break. But then two local guys, one of them was a girl, Ayla Faya. She's a girl from up there. She was fantastic. And actually, they had this really cool, like, pole shootout thing, which was like a dash, but they had, it was 1v1.
So, yeah, like a pole shuffle.
Yeah, it was a pole shuffle. That's exactly what they called it. And Ayla was the first car to do it. And she went all the way to the championship round with Carson.
That's cool.
It was really cool. And I think she's like 13 or something like that, or something ridiculous. And then there was a couple other local guys in the top five, which was really cool because Carson and Caden are both from North Carolina. That's where Travis lives now. And then Mackenzie Smith, she missed the A-Main the second night because of some problems. But she races for Compass Racing Development, which we know is McKenna Hassey's, like, little outlaw kart team. And she got a top five on night one. So that was really cool. There was just so many big names there that I just was not expecting. Like, I just really didn't know how big outlaw karts were, I guess.
Yeah, they're getting big pretty much all over.
Mm-hmm.
I know California, they produce a lot of talent out of there with the outlaw karts.
Yeah.
And Red Bluff, and there's another one out there too.
English Creek down in Knoxville is a big one.
And Millbridge in North Carolina.
That's where Carson and Caden race weekly. So, and Carson is a 4-time Millbridge champion, which is ridiculous. And now he's winning races in super late models, which is crazy. But we got to move on here.
We got to move on pretty quick. I have an eye doctor appointment coming up, so I'll have to step out in a few minutes.
But then we've got the All-Stars have been added. All-Star Circuit of Champions. Yes, those All-Stars have been added to the August 21st IRA show at Wilmot. And they've also added a date the night after in Plymouth, Indiana. That's going to be awesome. Have the All-Stars been to Wilmot recently? I don't think so.
Maybe in a few years ago, but...
Yeah, but that's going to be great.
Anyway, let's talk about... I want to talk about the Hoosier 100.
Yeah.
That's coming back. Last year was supposed to be their last year before it turned into a training zone for something. I can look it up here.
But it was meant to be closed, which was weird.
It was full-time harness training. I don't know what that is, but it was supposed to be closed after that, but the coronavirus actually saved that racetrack. And
that's, nobody's ever said that line before.
Yeah, the coronavirus saved, brought something back. It uncanceled something.
Yeah.
So the Hoosier 100, it's a big silver crown race right before the Indianapolis 500 that will happen this year. And I also wanted to talk about the IRA Corn Fest date at Angel Park.
Yeah.
It's gone from having no chance of running to, yeah, we might do it.
Yeah, so this was told to us in the driver's meeting, and it was told to us that it was hush-hush, and I don't really care. But because this is just such an exciting thing for us, especially. We love Angel Park.
It's my favorite racetrack.
Yeah, it's one of mine as well. And actually, this was told to us in the driver's meeting, and basically the IRA boss man, Steve Sinclair, shout out, buddy. He told us that save, like, keep the date open. Don't plan anything, because Angel Park, Madison International Raceway, they opened this last week, which is also in Dane County, and they basically have people stay in their cars, park on the outside of the racetrack, and stand up in truck beds and bring their own seating, and then they could host as many people as they wanted. They just, you know, couldn't open their gates, and they just took down the gates on the outside of the track and just let people park their stuff right next to the track. So they're thinking, Angel Park is trying to do some things with where if they put some stuff in the infield, have unlimited pit passes, and then have like 250 people in the grandstand, which is nothing, but it still might allow us to race at Angel Park, which would be fantastic.
Then I guess I'll have to get going here if you just want to finish up talking about the, I guess the 360 Nationals happen.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in our
we'll talk about winners. That in our, in our winner's circle. And I think that's going to wrap it up for our news. So we'll let you get to your little
eye doctor appointment.
See how
my papers are doing.
Oh, doctor. But yeah, and we'll come right back with our Sage Fruit winner's circle. All right, everybody. Thanks for sticking with us through that ad break. And we're going to get moving on with our Sage Fruit winner's circle. Sage Fruit is a high-quality grower, packer, and shipper of Washington State apples, pears, and cherries. We work hard on the farm, in the packing houses, and in sales to deliver an exceptional eating experience to our customers. For the past 17 years, Sage Fruit has been a proud sponsor of Sprint Cars and Sprint Car Racing. We value our relationship with Sprint Car fans and appreciate your continued support of Sage Fruit. Ask for Sage Fruit at your local grocer. Sage Fruit, an exceptional eating experience. And Sage Fruit, they just actually had their Ultimate Challenge in the ASCS stuff down at Southern Iowa Speedway, and we'll get to those results later on. What's going on there?
Just checking for two seconds. Checking a message in TikTok was the most recent thing up, so.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the feature results.
Yes.
F1. Red Bull took the win with Max Verstappen.
First win of the year.
First win of the year for anyone but Mercedes. And
they were 2 and 3 though, so it was very clearly still.
Yeah, Hamilton took second, and Valtteri Bottas rounded off the podium.
Yeah.
I also read a statistic that I think Hamilton now is pushed back his record tying race win that he'll get to. It was going to happen in Italy. If he were to win all the races, he would have tied or broke the record in Italy, which a lot of Ferrari fans don't want that to happen, because
the good old Tifosi, they would be raging in the streets if that
happened. To break Michael Schumacher's record, and Michael Schumacher racked up a lot of his wins with Ferrari, and happening at Ferrari's own test track, that probably there would have been riots in the street.
Yeah.
Anyway, so IndyCar was off.
Yep.
For the Midwest Sprint Car Association, Brandon McMullen, Kevin Karnitz, and Ben Schmidt were on the podium.
Fourth win of the season for Brandon McMullen.
Yeah, he's on a roll. He's on a tear, as some would say. Travis Aarons, he's penalized for wrecking Justin Miller. He drives back to fifth place.
Did you see that happen?
Yeah, it happened kind of right in front of me.
Okay.
A little bit. That was when my car was, it was rocking there in the middle.
Rocking and rolling.
In the middle third, I was, I think up to seventh or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was I saw the top five on a restart. I'm like, oh, they're like right in front of me. What do I do here?
That's just different.
I'm not used to this site this year. So, yeah, Travis Aarons, I think he restarted fifth. Mm. He was right in front of me. Or, yeah, what would that be? One, two, three? Yeah, fourth or fifth. Okay. I don't know. Anyway, he sent it in, and all of a sudden, I just saw a car just kind of spinning everywhere, but they didn't stop. And then all of a sudden, Justin Miller had something broke, and he had to come to a stop in turn three, or turn two, that would be, sorry. Okay. And, yeah, I don't know, came over the radio, 25T penalized for rough driving.
Nice to see Plymouth actually penalizing him for something, instead of just letting it go and doing nothing.
And another, yeah, moving on, another highlight of the night was Alex Pekorski won his first career win in a sprint car. He ripped in the B-May. That was nuts.
That's what I heard.
He was it was nuts.
That's awesome.
A lot of my attention was at Tyler Brabant in the B-May, but every so often I just look up and all of a sudden, wow, he's going fast.
Yeah, that was cool.
It was fun to watch. Wisconsin win the sprints. Nathan Crane won. He did a backflip off his car in victory lane. Ryan Marshall took second. Bill Balog third. I did hear from you that Bill Balog was walking away with it.
He walked away with his heat race. He won by like half a track.
Gotcha.
In the feature, he was kind of mired up. I think the invert put him in like 10th or something.
Ooh.
So he ended up pretty far back, but worked his way up to third, obviously. Not too bad for a winged guy hopping in a little wingless car. And
well, he's ran a few midget races. He's raced with the USAC 410s a little bit.
Yeah.
He's not lacking experience in any open wheel stuff, that's for sure. The IRA, you were there. You want to take that one?
Yeah, so Bill Balog took the win. Russell Borland finished second. Great run for Russell. He said his car was just on rails. And Mike Reinke in that Hood Motorsports 10W finished in third. But that does not tell the story of Bill Balog in that A-Main. Oh, my. I honestly have never seen a car win a feature by that amount of distance. He lapped up to 7th.
Holy cow.
And out of a 24-car field.
That's nuts.
It was just... And, I mean, Russell Borland, props to you, buddy. But, I mean, Balog was just 3/4 of a track like ahead. And Wilmot is not exactly a super small speedway. So, that was cool. And I was down there working for Sean. And we had a rough night early on. We were working through some fuel issues. It kind of sounded similar to kind of what you guys have going on in that 99. And basically, we just had to open up the fuel pump. There's a little valve in there, and it wasn't opened enough. So it wasn't getting enough fuel into the motor. And it actually wasn't heating up the motor at all.
Hmm.
We were idling at like 100, like 100 degrees. Like, it was nowhere. And finally got it up to temperature after the heat, like right at the end of the heat. And he started making moves there, but just not enough to get in the A. So we got put on the outside of the front row of the B, went and won that thing by just about half a track. So that was pretty cool. You can see the highlights from that B main on Twitter.
I'll go check that out. I didn't get a chance to watch it. The IRA Lightning Sprints were also there. Mm-hmm. Wilmot, CJ Maluig, Nick Petska, and Mike
New.
New,
yep. CJ Maluig and Mike New. On the podium. That broke a streak of 3 straight wins for Nick Petska. So, moving on from there, some more open wheel stuff. Badger Midgets were at Sycamore Speedway this weekend down in Illinois. Someone not named Chase McDermott picked up a win for the first time in 5 races.
Almost broke the all-time Badger record that dates back to... Okay. I think it was Lanny Scott in 1946 or something like that.
Oh, my. So, and apparently it wasn't going to happen because Chase started, I think, like back end of the top 10 somewhere in there. He was up to second with 3 laps to go, hunting down Tyler Barron, who eventually won the race. And then he said his motor developed a misfire and he pulled off the track with 3 laps to go.
And I think he said last week that he was putting in a Honda engine, so it might be something to do with that.
New motor, yeah.
Yeah, new motor. Always gremlins in those new motors for some reason.
Yep. Jeff Zielinski came home second, and Nick Barron finished third. So the two Barrons bookending the podium. That's pretty cool.
NASCAR. Mm-hmm. The Cup Series had a doubleheader again in Michigan this time. Mm-hmm. Kevin Harvick won both of them. It was the first time since 1971 where a Cup Series race that was held back to back, the same driver. And then there was only one time in the Xfinity Series, I thought it was in the same stat book, but Austin Cindric is the only person to ever do that in the Xfinity Series.
And
he won the race at Road America.
Nice segue, Will.
I'm getting better at this podcast and stuff.
Yeah, and he did really well.
The Truck Series were also at Michigan, and I think... Oh, man, I don't even have this.
Well, we just said you're getting better at this podcasting stuff.
Yeah, you win some, you lose some. Zane Smith won the Truck Series race after a quick Google search. The World of Outlaws, they had the Ironman 55, probably my favorite race of the year.
Yeah.
Sheldon Haudenschild, Brad Sweet, and Rico Abreu were on the podium for night one. Sheldon runs really good at I-55
Speedway. He won the Ironman 55 last year.
By a lot, up to fifth place.
Yeah, that was one of those.
And then night two, I got to watch this race live on Dirt Vision.
Yep.
And Kyle freaking Larson, as you have written down here, won the race. He had a little bit of a stumble mid-race. I would say 20 to go or something like that. Mm-hmm. Someone tried sliding him, and he kind of got into the cushion, got out of control a little bit, but a couple restarts fell in his favor, and he ended up with a win. Sheldon Haudenschild and Shane Stewart were on the podium.
What a race.
But I think a shout-out needs to be said to Jacob Allen.
Yes.
He won a lot of that race. Shane Stewart led also quite a bit of it as well.
There were probably legitimately five or six cars that had a really good shot at winning that race. But yeah, I feel so bad for Jacob Allen, man.
He's going to get one. He's going to win the Knott Nationals.
Hopefully. If that was a normal length feature event, he would have won that race. Just about.
It would have been close.
Just about. He was still in that top two with, 30 laps in or so.
But late model series, speaking of World of Outlaws, mm-hmm. they were held at Beaver Dam Raceway, all in Wisconsin this week.
Yep.
On August 4th, 6th, 7th, and 8th, Jimmy Owens won at Beaver Dam. Brandon Overton won the opener at Cedar Lake. And then on the 7th, they had a pole dash. Billy Moyer won it. And on the 8th, Brandon Overton won it again.
Mm-hmm. And that 8-7 date was just kind of like a qualifying night, basically.
Gotcha.
So they had a bunch of heat races and then a pole dash. So,
Yep,
Brandon Overton just basically was on another level from what I saw on the highlights and everything. And the track was really blown off. I mean, three straight nights of late models. I mean, there's nothing really you can do about that. But, I don't know. It seemed like a cool event. And obviously $50,000 to win is ridiculous anywhere. So, All-Stars were off this week. And then we had the ASCS Sage Fruit Ultimate Challenge down at Southern Iowa Speedway. Brian Brown took home the win. Dominic Selzy finished second. And Brock Zierfoss finished third. That's two big races that Dominic Selzy has come really close to winning. Both the opener at Houston and now this. So he's going to get one here pretty soon too.
I could see him pulling off an upset at a big mm-hmm. race.
Knottville Nationals.
The Knottville Nationals.
Taco truck. Could you imagine the amount of tacos in Knoxville if Dominic Selzy won?
He'll probably have sell tacos out of his merch trailer pretty soon.
Yeah, I think that was the plan. They were going to park that normal taco truck that's at Knoxville Nationals next to his merch trailer, in a parking lot somewhere.
Of course. Then the 360 Nationals happened this week, ran as normal.
Mm-hmm.
Austin McCarl won the first qualifying night. Linton Jeffrey won the second qualifying night. And the finale was won by Kerry Madsen. And a side note, Linton Jeffrey, a former guest on the podcast, won the best appearing car as well.
Yeah, and that sick looking
Pizza Ranch car, the black and white.
It literally had nothing to do with Pizza Ranch, but the black and white, weird camo effect was really cool.
Yeah, what are their colors? Their
Pizza
color,
Ranch?
Yeah. It's just I would say they're
brown and something. I don't know. But it looked awesome.
Yeah, a brown, yellow kind of thing.
Yeah,
maybe their website is black and white.
I have
no, it's not.
Idea.
It's red.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah, the colors don't look like they have anything to do with Pizza Ranch.
It was basically
really cool.
It was a black and white car with just black Pizza Ranch logos everywhere that there was white.
and then the black like faded into the, it was really, really cool. But yeah, really awesome seeing Linton win down there. I mean, he's obviously, he runs an Oxville Weekly, so he knows that track inside and out, and it showed, one of the biggest nights of the year. And then Kerry Madsen's been on a roll recently with a lot of podium finishes with the All-Stars, a couple, like I think there was a win in there somewhere, and then obviously winning the 360 Nats is fantastic. And you're our resident USAC expert, so you want to run down these few USAC results here?
Sure. So the Silver Crown cars, they had their season opener at Selins Grove Speedway in Pennsylvania. Shane Cottle got the win there.
Mm-hmm.
The sprint cars, they were off. And then Pennsylvania Midget Week was happening as well. They only got to run two nights. And Sunshine, Tyler Courtney, got the win in both of those. Mm-hmm. And kind of going from USAC to USAC, or Power I here, both the same midgets. Spencer Baston took the win at the Ironman 55 on the opening night. And then Clinton Boyles, he won the
finale second, night.
He won the finale night.
Really? I got to watch the first midget race there on opening night with Spencer Baston. He started way back in the field. Way back in the field. And actually, it was Shannon McQueen leading the first big part of that race. And then she ended up flipping. There were a lot of really big wrecks at I-55 in the midgets.
Midgets, always, when they wreck hard, unfortunately.
One of them...
I think they have the best... They have the best racing out there right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was fantastic racing. Now, that wraps it up for results. Now we got some upcoming races. F1 is back again this week. Three in a row for F1.
They'll call it a triple header, but... It's just
three races.
It's three races, people. Come on.
August 16th, they're going to be at, this whole weekend, they'll have the Spanish Grand Prix at the Circuit de Barcelona, Catalunya. And an IndyCar. Do you want to explain this? Because this is all like foreign language to me a little bit here.
Yeah, so I had to kind of familiarize myself with the Indy 500 process really fast. Because mm-hmm. I had to prepare for working down there,
yeah.
And I had to know what I was talking about. So, pretty much IndyCar's back this week, but not really. They'll be practicing for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I think 7 days of practice before the Indy 500. And starting on the 12th, they have a veteran practice and a rookie practice. So the veterans will go out there and they'll run, and that's to kind of help run in the track a little bit,
yeah.
And get them practice. And then the rookies, people who have never really done the race or maybe just have one race on it, they'll go out and practice by themselves. And then at the end of the day, they'll all get to all go out and practice together.
Mm-hmm.
On the 13th, they have it's just practice all day. It's like from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. or whatever. The lights go down.
Okay.
Just go out and practice. On the 14th, they have a qualifying practice day, which for Indy cars, if you don't know, they have two engine mappings. They have a qualifying mapping and a race mapping. And on the 14th, it's dedicated. You can only practice in the qualifying engine mapping. And then the 15th, they'll have two groups of qualifying practice and then qualifying.
Are they... They're not doing bumping, are they? Because they only have 33 entries.
Right? Yeah, they don't have a bump day.
There's no need to bump. Okay.
They had bump day in their original schedule, but that got taken off.
Okay.
And on the 15th, they'll qualify. And then the next day, the 16th, only the fastest 9 will qualify. And then they'll qualify the fast 9 to go for the P1 award. And
so it's the Firestone fast 9 instead of the fast 6.
Right.
Basically. Okay.
Yep. And they will have a full race practice. And then that's the last time they will go in their qualifying engine mapping, and then that'll bring us up to next week this time.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about the rest of the Indy 500 kind of stuff, which it's just practicing and then the race.
But it's all, I think you could watch it all on NBCSN Gold. That's like subscription-based service.
Yes.
And then the qualifying, I believe, is on NBC. Or is it on NBCSN?
I don't know where it is. If you are interested, it's on their website, I know.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't write it down on here.
Perfect.
We never really write down where you can watch them.
No.
So.
Well, yeah. That's some more oval stuff. Well, actually, Roval. stuff.
Roval stuff.
NASCAR is completely at the Daytona Roval this week. Sunday, August 16th at 3 p.m., the Cup Series will race on the Daytona Roval. On Saturday, August 15th at 3 p.m., the Xfinity Series will race on the Daytona Roval. On Sunday, August 16th at 12 p.m., the Truck Series will race on the Daytona Roval. And on Friday, August 14th, the ARCA Menards Series will race at 5 p.m. on the Daytona Roval. Are you excited for that, or are you excited for that?
I'm so excited. I once they announced it, I knew I cleared out my day. I'm gonna watch that stuff.
So far, I've watched two NASCAR races this year. This is going to sound really bad to all of our viewers, but I've watched the Daytona 500 and the NASCAR Xfinity race at Road America. Those are the two I've watched, and I'm going to watch the Cup Series at the Daytona Roval. Probably the Xfinity Series, too, on my way down to Fairbury.
I think the Xfinity Series will be really entertaining.
Yeah, I just like those cars better. I think they're just better.
Honestly, if they just kind of like took the Xfinity Series cars and just put the Cup racing schemes on them.
With bigger engines?
No, just leave them the exact same way they are. That'd be a way better package. Mm-hmm. Dramatic pause.
Way better. Back to some local stuff here. The IRA has one scheduled race this weekend. They'll be at Fairbury American Legion Speedway in Fairbury, Illinois on Saturday, August 15th. I'm so excited to be going to that race. I love Fairbury. It's one of my favorite tracks in the entire world. I've been there a couple times. But just to be able to see the IRA there. I've never seen 410s there. I've only seen, I think the biggest like horsepower cars I've seen there are late models. But I've never seen sprint cars there. So, and I don't remember the last time the IRA was there. I think they were there like 2 years ago or something like that. But that's going to be a heck of a show. If you can't get into the Knoxville Nationals, head on over to Fairbury, Illinois for some fantastic 410 racing as well. And then the Badger Midgets had a question mark on the schedule this weekend. They're supposed to be at Angel Park on the 16th. Depending on what Angel Park works out with the county this week, that may or may not happen. But, you know, hopefully by the time this podcast comes out, they'll have made a decision. You can go follow Badger Midgets on Facebook. I think they're at BMARA Racing.
Yep.
And on Twitter as well at BMARA Fans. And then I don't know where... Oh, the Outlaw Late Models are off this week because they always take a week off after the Nationals. And then the Outlaw Sprints, obviously, the 13th through the 15th, they have the one and only at Knoxville, the Knoxville Nationals. Too bad it's not the Knoxville Nationals. That was kind of clever when they did it like that.
I'm sure they'll do that again next year if stuff gets back to normal.
Yep.
When it gets back to normal, I should say.
Or whatever the new normal is. And then Dirt Kings are back this weekend. They've had quite a long time off. And I think now that I was looking at that, I really thought it was just because they couldn't schedule any races. But genuinely, I think it's because there were so many bigger late model series in Wisconsin. Like, the World of Outlaw Late Models have had how many races in Wisconsin recently?
Quite a few.
Yeah, since they were at Plymouth, and they had Shawano and Outagamie, and then they were at Beaver Dam, and then they had the USA Nationals. So I think they were just kind of letting the Dirt Kings guys just go run with them mostly. But now they have a doubleheader this weekend at Plymouth on Friday the 14th, and that is the Diamond 42. That's $4,200 to win, $420 to start in the A-Main. And then they're back. Well, they're not back, but there was a late model race at Gravity Park earlier this season. I think it was just unsanctioned. But the Dirt Kings are now sanctioning this race on Sunday the 16th. So it's going to be interesting to see where all those drivers go run on Saturday. Because you're going to get some go up to Shawano, but I think Gravity Park's a little bit closer to Plymouth. So, and they're racing at Plymouth on the 14th. So
I guess it's how many people are chasing Dirt Kings points.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true.
The All-Stars Circuit Champions, they have off until the 21st. And that's at I-96 Speedway, Lake Odessa, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And the MSA, they have one race this weekend, Saturday night, the 15th at Plymouth.
However, I think, is the MSA running on that Friday too with the Dirt Kings?
Nope.
No?
It's We're just not there.
Dirt Kings, B-Mods, and Grand Nationals?
Yeah.
Something like that. All right. And then USAC. Do they have anything this
week? So USAC, what they have going on here is the sprint cars and the midgets, they have off until the non-points night, the night before the 500. But the Silver Crown cars, they have a race on the 15th at Salem Speedway. That's an asphalt track.
I was going to say, that's asphalt.
And too. They'll have two asphalt races in a row. The Power I have off. It seems like a lot of these touring series have off this weekend.
I think it's just with everything else going on. I mean, especially with the All-Stars, you're not going to compete with any Outlaws race at Knoxville.
No.
So I think that's really smart for them to take off. And they have had an ungodly amount of races so far this year with the All-Stars.
Give them some nights off. Holy cow.
Let them go run up some other 360 stuff and all that cool things. So that's great. And with the midget stuff, they've had a lot of racing recently, too. So many midget weeks. And, you know.
Midget weeks are really cool, though.
Oh, yeah. They're awesome. I love them.
If they just had 52 midget weeks.
You can find a track. You can find tracks willing to do that, I'm sure. But then we've got all of our local stuff running as well. Sean was running this week, 141 Gravity Park, The Berg, Slinger, Dells Raceway Park, Jefferson Speedway. They're all running this week. 141's got some big races coming up next week, which we're going to talk about. They have the Captain of the Creek coming up next week. That's, I believe, the 13th through the 18th. So we're going to talk about that on next week's podcast. And now, what time do we got here? Oh, do we want to run through? Oh, no, I don't have them done yet.
We're going to run through the power rankings, but Lauren has been heeing and hawing all day.
Yeah.
About where to put people.
I honestly don't know, but we'll figure them out by the end of the show here. But we've got a few minutes left we're going to just gonna move into that right now. But we're going to move into our Gasroots Project Hot Seat interview. Very excited this week. We've got Harley White coming into the podcast, so stay tuned for that. We will be right back with our Gasroots Project Hot Seat segment. Welcome, everyone, to our Gasroots Project Hot Seat segment. Wisconsin-based Gasroots Project is a nonprofit organization working to strengthen and grow grassroots racing. Since 2017, the project has produced several short films and articles in addition to financially assisting racers and tracks through awards and sponsorships. To donate or learn more, visit GasrootsProject.com. And we're very pleased to welcome into our Gasroots Project Hot Seat segment this week, ASCS National Sprint Car Now feature winner, Harley White. How are we doing today, Harley?
I'm great. How are you?
I think we're fantastic. We're very happy to have you here. We kind of know where you came from and like how your racing career has gone so far. But there's going to be some people listening who don't. So if you could just kind of run down how you got your start in racing and what got you to where you are today.
Yeah, right. I mean, I grew up in a racing family. My dad raced. My grandpa raced. Always was kind of like the tomboy of the family, and I finally got my first race car, a mini sprint, in 2008, and my first race ever, I had a horrible accident, got burned over 45% of my body, deep third and fourth degree burns, and spent, 6 months recovering and in the hospital and having all sorts of surgeries, and at that time, my family was like, we're done racing, we had this horrible accident, Harley's not ever going to race again. And I talked him into it and went back to racing in April of 2009 in the same mini sprint race car. And I stayed in the mini sprints for about 4 to 5 years. And then I jumped up to a two-barrel sprint car and then later on jumped up into a ASCS 360 sprint car. And I've been in that for about the last 5 years or so now, 5 or 6 years. And yeah, just kind of always been on the road traveling my whole racing career. I never really stayed in one spot, never really had a home track. And my family and I did it as a team, as just my mom and dad and I for a long time. And then last year, Johnny Herrera was my crew chief on to this year as well. So, it's kind of how my career got started. And we picked up a couple of wins along the way. And I won quite a bit in the micros and into the sprint cars as well. And biggest win up to date is a national tour win this year. So it's been a pretty long road, I feel like. But looking back, it's all kind of went by pretty quickly with my career.
Yeah, sounds like you got really, really fast progress right there. You said that in your first race ever, you said you got burned?
Yes, first race ever.
Whoa.
Crazy.
That's not a very
auspicious
start.
Yeah, it's not a very good deal at all. And I don't know why, but I just knew I had to race, and that wasn't going to stop me, so.
It's determination right there if you want to get back in the car after that.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah,
With your whole career, and obviously you've had a lot of success to get you where you're at now, if you could relive any moment in your racing career, what would it be?
Oh, geez. Probably just like that first big win over and over and over again. The national tour win was probably one of the biggest ones up to date. And if I could just do that every weekend, that would be happy by me.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely the highlight of my career right now is the national tour win at the Ditch, just because it's been a long road coming, and I should have won a couple last year and kind of gave them away and ran second and a few like that. And just really felt like we should have got our first one last year and even the year before, and it just never really worked out. And I make mistakes or something would happen, so it feels good to finally get that first one this year.
Could you really quickly, just for people listening that maybe aren't super familiar with the 360 side of like national touring sprint cars, explain like how hard that is to get a win in a 360 sprint car?
My gosh, it is so hard. We travel on a national tour base, so we travel US-wide. We go East Coast, West Coast. There's usually about anywhere from 15 to 20 guys that follow the whole deal, and then you show up, like let's say you show up to Knoxville this weekend, it's an AFC, it's national tour race. You have your regular 15 guys plus 40 other guys or girls that are capable of winning. So you might have 50 cars at each race, and everyone's capable of winning, you know, so it's just... It's like winning an outlaw show of a 360 sprint car. Same car, just different motor. And it's really hard to do. So it's the big win, and it just goes to show, I think I'm the first woman to ever win a national tour in the 30 years that it's been going on. So it's a pretty big accomplishment.
Yeah, absolutely it is.
If you had to kind of race a different kind of car, I know you said you raced the micros, minis, and the sprint car, is there anything else you have driven, or
yeah,
is there any
dirt modified times never been on the asphalt? I always have hopes, you know, wherever my career might take me, wherever opportunities might lead, I'm down, you know. I just want to race and want to be successful and want to be good at it, so you know, I'm open to every opportunity there's ever gave to me. And racing in Australia is fun during the winter time with a sprint car, so that's a blast. And just whatever else gets thrown my way, I'm down to give it a go.
Is there anything that you really want to check off your bucket list when it comes to driving race cars?
I definitely want to get on asphalt one day, just because I've never done it. I think just the experience and seeing how it relates to dirt will really help me in both sides of racing. And, yeah, I think that would be awesome to get on asphalt one day.
Yeah.
Do you do anything special to prepare for a night of racing, or can you just kind of walk us through getting to the track and getting to the end of the night?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty laid back for the most part, and you kind of hurry up and get your car done the night before, day before, and get to the track and hang out until driver's meeting time rolls around at 6 p.m. or whatever, and it's just a long day of waiting, really. And then once race time starts, you have about 4 hours that you're actually doing something and racing or waiting for your race. So race day is actually pretty relaxed. I have like a nap time ritual that I like to do. I like to take a nap before I race, like in the middle of the day. If I have time. If I don't have time, I don't nap. But that's probably about it. I mean, it's pretty laid back until you get to racing, and then you're nonstop in the car, out of the car, and working on it or whatever.
Yeah, that's awesome. So when you show up to an ASCS National Tour show, we don't get too much ASCS racing up here. So for people that aren't really familiar with that, who do you think is the best driver in your ASCS paddock, like from your normal guys?
Yeah, I mean, definitely Sam Hayford-Teeb. I mean, he's won the team championship the last few weekends or last few years. And I think he's already won like 4 or 5 races this year. And he's definitely a veteran racer, been around his whole life, you know, mostly, and ran with the Outlaws and things like that. So he's always the one to beat every national show. You know, you always have those couple guys that you're like, man, I just got to try to finish in front of them. But, of course, it's tough racing, and, you know, he's definitely the one to beat. at the moment in the last couple of years anyways, for sure. So definitely Sam Hubertip is pretty good all the time.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you have any, like, up-and-comers to watch for on that note? Like, guys that you think might be a force to be reckoned with in the future?
There's, like, three rookies this year. I think Danny Sams, Garrett Williamson, and Chase Randall. They're all younger and just, you know, great racers. And by the time, you know, they have as much experience as everyone else, they're going to be pretty unstoppable. So, it's cool to watch, you know. I'm kind of older of the group now, 25, which doesn't seem old, but it kind of is. And it's cool to watch everyone grow up behind you and do good things.
Oh, that's awesome. So ASCS, once again, there's a lot of people up here who just aren't familiar with that schedule. What's your favorite track that you've ever raced on? And what kind of tracks would you like to see maybe added to that schedule?
Yeah, well, my favorite track is probably Little Rock Short Track Nationals, or I-30 is what people call it. But we race on everything. We race on half miles, 5/8, quarter miles, three. I mean, we race on everything from Bullrings to, you know, Knoxville. And we're everywhere and anywhere, just all the wrong weekends. You know, the Outlaws might go there in the same year that we do, but we go on a different time of the year. So we got a lot of popular tracks, and we got a lot of non-popular tracks, so it just kind of depends on where we're at.
That's awesome.
So you said you go to all sorts of different styles of tracks. What's your driving style, and what kind of tracks kind of feed into that?
I like elbows up for the most part, and just, you know, elbows up racetracks are probably more of my favorite style. And sorry, crew chief Johnny, hang on just a second.
You're fine.
Okay. He's talking to me. Anyways, yeah, so elbows up racetracks are more so my forte, I guess you could say. But more so now, I just gotta be good at every track I go to, and that's my main focus, just being good everywhere we go and figuring it out. And try not to think my driving style has to work for one racetrack. You know, you got to be good at all of them.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Do you do anything in your free time that isn't racing, or are you just kind of like nose down?
Not at all. Everything I do is with racing or racing related, and that's pretty much it. So, you know, we work on the car during the week. We race on the weekend, sometimes during the week, and everything's to do with racing is us. That's all we do.
I was going to say, this last weekend you were at obviously 360 Nats. I know you ran one night of there, and then did you run the front road or the Sage Fruit Challenge last night?
No. Yeah, we ran the front. That's a national tour race as well. So yeah, we ran the front row challenge last night, and then the 410 portion of that got canceled today. So we finished like 13th or something. We kind of got behind the ball in the qualifier, and just started in the back of the feature, and it's really hard to make up ground. So we kind of went forward a couple positions and just kind of stayed there. So wasn't the best finish, but good points, nice nights for us. We just needed to finish the A and be consistent. So that was good.
Yeah, that's how you do well in the points. And then, so for the rest of 2020, you know, the ASCS series and all that stuff, are you planning on running all of the rest of the ASCS schedule?
Yeah, that's our main goal. The last 3 years, we've been on a national tour schedule, so we won't veer off of that much unless there's nothing going on, then we might find a race here and there.
And then as far as your plans for the future, what is that? Are you planning on going 410 racing at some point? Or
no, I mean, I own my own gear, and, you know, right now I just own three 360 motors, so as long as I'm on the national tour, I'll just have 360. So if I decide not to do that, then I might have to sell a couple to buy 410. But as of now, no plans unless someone decides to give me a motor or something. But I personally cannot afford that. So yeah, We'll just keep doing what we're doing.
All right. So a little something we like to do in this podcast is we ask the current guest a question for next week's guest. And last week we had on Badger Midget Series champion
Chase McDermott.
Why couldn't I not remember? We talk about him every week on this podcast, but he asked you, what has winning your first ASCS race done for your confidence? And then the second part of it would be, what does it mean to you to be able to become the first woman to do that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge relief in a sense because I've been so close the last couple years, and finally to get it, and not only I didn't get it gave to me, I had to work for it in a bit. So, I mean, I gave away the lead for a little bit and had to battle my way back and grab the lead again. So I kind of did it in sort of fashionable style, if you know what I mean. And then, yeah, being the first woman is just, it's just like a, you know, like a statement, like a stat, I guess you could say. I'll be in the history books for a while. And being in the history books in my eyes is really cool, and it's a lot of fun. And you'll actually have something, you know, to show people one day. Like, yeah, I did that. I was in the history books for a little bit until someone else broke it, you know. So it's just a cool feeling, and it's something I'll never forget, and hopefully I can continue doing so.
Yeah, absolutely. And then next week on the show, we've got a guy, local hot shoe from up here in our version of 360 Racing, the Midwest Sprint Car Association, Jack Vanderboom. How old is he, 16
now? I want to say he's 16.
16. He's already up there fighting for race wins and all that good stuff. If you have any questions for Jack, we'll for sure pose them to him next week.
Did you say, I'm sorry, I got kind of quiet. Did you say he's a local racer up there, like 16 or something?
Yep, he's 16 and he runs a 360 up here with our regional touring series.
Oh, cool. Question. I am terrible with questions. let's see here. I guess, oh man, can y'all give me any help?
he hasn't won a race yet. He was really close to Rookie of the Year last season.
Okay. Just ask him, you know, what does he think, as a racer, hang on, how to word this, what does he think it's going to take to get that first win? That's a good
That is a good question.
Because he came close.
He's come very close getting cool.
Well, maybe he might know, like, something like, hey, I kind of messed up here, or something didn't happen out of my hands. Because I know whenever I almost didn't win my first national tour race, I nearly spun it out in 1 and 2. So that was kind of scary. And I knew everyone was going to kick me in the butt whenever I got back into the pits. But I didn't
save it.
So I saved it and somehow pulled off the win. So that was kind of cool.
Awesome. So for the last little bit of this interview, Harley, I'm going to give you the floor. This is your time to plug any sponsors, plug any people that you want to thank.
Okay, cool. First off, I want to thank my parents, Johnny and Ann Herrera. Johnny Herrera is my crew chief. Life of Hope Ministries, Dustin Stream Foundation, Champion Racing, Oil Peaks, Pete Racewear. The Mower Shop, Charlie's Trucking and Forklift. And, you know, everyone that helps us along the way. We have lots of, you know, fans that come up and buy T-shirts and all sorts, and lots of people that just want to help and lend a hand here and there, and I just can't appreciate everyone enough. And you know, thank you to all the little sponsors that chip in at the, not little, sometimes they're big, chip in at the racetracks and keep them on their feet, and as well as the sponsors that chip in for races and the national tour as well. So lots of people, you know, it takes an army to, you know, keep the racing world going, and it's just a really cool thing to be a part of is a racing community. So I'm thankful to everyone.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much for coming on, Harley. This was great. This was a fantastic interview. Hopefully we'll see you at a local Midwest track here sometime in the near future. Do you have any races coming up in the Midwest here?
I don't know. We're going to be racing in Lakeside, Kansas City tomorrow, and then few races in Kansas here and there, so nothing up north right now, but that could change. You never know.
Absolutely. Well, have a good one, Harley, and thanks for coming on.
All right, thank you.
All right, well, we are still waiting to hear back from our guest this week, Harley White, so we're going to get into our Hop Farms bullpen power rankings, and I think we're going to get started with our Professional Plating, sponsored. Thank you once again for them to coming on most recently to sponsor the podcast. Their IRA Sprint Car Power Rankings. So, Will, you want to
kind of talk through them, and then we'll explain why they are where they are.
Sure. So Bill Balog at the top all season.
Shock.
Scotty Neitzel, Jeremy Schultz, Scotty Thiel. Blake Neme is the only one besides Bill Balog to stay the same. And Russell Borland, Jake Blacker, Sean Ray Hall, Dave Utek, and Jolden Goldsberry.
Ooh. A tough one. Yeah, Bill Balog obviously still up top, won by like 3/4 of a track. That's not going to change anytime soon, I don't think. Scotty Neitzel moves up one spot from 3rd to 2nd. He's 2nd in the points now, and I think had another top 5 last... Or no, he didn't have a top 5, but he came on really strong by the end of the feature. One person that I do want to mention before I forget right away is Scott Beertzer. He got a top 5 at Wilmot, and he's been running really well this season. He's just been really inconsistent, and I haven't seen like 3 or 4 weeks of or races of him in a row just finishing like top 10 or showing the pace to get into the top 10 in like 3 or in different racetracks. So that's why he's not in the top 10. But he will get he's gotten consideration, and he will again if he keeps racing like he has. So Scotty Neitzel is up to 2nd. Jeremy Schultz up one spot to 3rd. Had another good run at Wilmot. Scotty Thiel goes down 2 spots. He didn't race this last week. He was saving his car for Knoxville. And he's not going to race this Saturday either at Fairbury. So he might move down again. Again, when someone doesn't show up, I don't really take that into account. I just kind of put everybody else where I think they're going to be. And then I just slot that no-show in wherever they end up. And then Blake Neme stays in 5th. I felt so bad for Blake, and I feel like I should have moved him up, but he had an absolute rocket at Wilmot. Just, he went 4th to 1st in his heat race, and I think threw about 85 slide jobs. It was so much fun to watch. He was up to 3rd in the feature before he, I think he ran over a spun car's tire and broke something on the front of his car and had to pull off. So huge bummer for Blake. Russell Borland, our biggest mover of the week, with a 2nd place finish at Wilmot and a win in a dash. He was 2nd in the dash. We'll get to who won the dash a little later. 2nd in the dash, 2nd in the A. Really good run for Russell. Jake Blackhurst moves down 1 spot. A lot of stuff happened with Jake at Wilmot, and I don't really need to get into it too much, but just not a whole lot of great decision-making from Jake, and he didn't have the pace anyways to be up in the top 5 or anywhere near, so he moves down 1 spot. Sean Rahal moves up 1 spot, and I know everybody's going to call bias and everything like that for me now because I work for the guy, but he did have a B main win and moved up 6 spots in the feature and was fighting for a top 10 before somebody spun around in front of him, or almost spun around in front of him, killed his momentum. So really good night from Sean, along with some other things that were going on with him that were, you know, kind of dampering on his evening. He did really well to persevere and get up into 13th in the A and winning the B. Dave Utek moves up 1 spot. This was kind of a paradox for me because he did really well in his heat. He won a dash, which Dave, you know, it's a rarity that he's on the podium, but this year he's been running really well when he doesn't wreck. Unfortunately, at Wilmot, going into turn 1, lap 1, he flipped the car from the pole. So I don't know exactly what happened, but I did feel like I had to move him up 1 spot because Jordan Goldsberry was a no-show. So he moves down and is now the last car in our power rankings at 10th. And I know Jordan's going to be good when he comes back to the IRA. I would assume he's going to run at Fairbury because he's not on the list for the one and only. You know, we'll see. I actually did just look at that list for the one and only. Scotty Thiel is the only one from the IRA on that list. So everybody else from the IRA should be at Fairbury, which will be cool to watch. And now, the local boys, MSA, and we've got a new number one.
So Brandon McMullen, he goes back up to the number one spot. He's been kind of, he's been dominating here a little bit. Travis Aarons moves down to 2nd. Kurt Davis, 3rd. Justin Miller, 4th. Ben Schmidt, 5th. Lance Fosbender, 6th. Brandon Berth, 7th. Yours truly, 8th. Kevin Karnitz, 9th. And Justin Erickson, 10th.
So this one was really hard, too, because you had the top 5, and most of them had really good races again. Except Lance Fassbender, who didn't make the feature, which is weird for Lance especially. Mm-hmm. But yeah, up top, this was a hard decision because I haven't seen any video from Plymouth from Saturday, which I think needs to change. I think they need to get either get what they have out sooner or get live streaming there because, I mean, it's you got a big 360 class. I think they should live stream it. But from what I heard, the whole deal with Travis running over Justin Miller and then getting sent to the back, it was kind of a racing deal from what I've heard from both sides of the story. And, you know, obviously the crowd was really happy when he went to the back. But from what I've heard from the drivers, it was just kind of, you know, whatever happened, happened. And both him and Justin kind of got the worst ends of it. And he was running really well and obviously went to the back and drove his way back up to fifth. So he still, I feel like, deserves the top spot. But Brandon won the feature. And, you know, Travis was only up to third when that happened. So, would he have caught Brandon? Possibly. But would he have been able to pass him? You know, Brandon's a hard guy to pass on any night. And he's been really hungry lately because Travis has reeled off a couple wins. And, you know, he's fighting for that championship. So I feel like Brandon probably would have won that feature anyways. So he moves up into the top spot. He's just been on a tear with top fives and podiums. Kurt Davis stays in third. Didn't really see anything to move him around. Justin Miller kind of had that racing deal or bad luck or whatever you want to call it happen. But other than that, he had a pretty solid night, ran in the top five until that happened. So he stays fourth. Ben Schmidt moves up one spot after cranking out another podium, third for Ben. So he moves up into fifth. Lance Fassbender moves down one spot to sixth after not making the A. Brandon Berth is our biggest mover of the week, moving up two spots to seventh after going 18th to seventh mm-hmm. in the feature. That's really impressive. He got by you.
So, yeah, he did.
Yeah, great job, Will. Thanks. Speaking of Will, he sits right now in eighth, and I just found this, excuse me, before we recorded this little segment, and Will likes to joke, and we all like to joke, that Will's a mid-pack 360 driver. But his spot in points in both Plymouth Dirt Track and MSA is an 11th, which, if you don't know, how many cars make an MSA feature, Will?
22.
He's right smack dab in the middle. Yeah. So that's but yeah, you got a top 10 and, you know, advanced your position in every race you were in. So I didn't really feel a reason to move you around. And Kevin Karnitz got a podium. Really awesome run for Kevin after he actually was out of our power rankings 2 weeks ago, then jumped back in last week, and he moves up a spot this week with another great run. Justin Erickson missed the feature for the first time this entire season and drops in our power rankings for the first time this season down to 10th.
Hmm.
So I don't exactly know what happened there. Maybe they're having some car issues or maybe he just had an off night. But it is really hard in the MSA with how many cars and how many good cars there are to just make a feature every night. So that just shows how impressive, you know, guys' runs have been this season that are in that top five that have made pretty much every feature. So I think it's going to wrap it up for our power rankings. We will have all three of our traveling series will have new sets of power rankings after this week, as the Dirt Kings will have a doubleheader. So
maybe a big movement there in the late model.
Yep, that's going to move around, I would bet. Obviously, IRA one race, MSA one race. So, you know, who knows? We'll see what happens after that. It's hard to move guys around after one race, because it's not really representative sometimes, but it is what it is. But I think we're still waiting to hear from Harley White, our guest. I hope we don't have a second guest just not call us. But we'll see.
We'll get it handled. We'll hear from Harley, I'm sure, pretty
soon if, here. If not soon, then we'll get it in tomorrow or whatever, but it'll be on this podcast. So, and I think we're going to move on. We'll plug that interview in here. And you got anything else for power rankings or anything?
No, that's it. Pretty much. Just thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Share us up. If you're interested in some social media management, hit up Midwest Autosports on Facebook, Twitter.
Yeah, and we've got a website now. And by the time this goes up, we're going to have the domain name and everything like that. Right now it's up, but it's under something like weird Wix site. Yeah. Because that's what I'm using to build it. But the link is on our Twitter. It's on our Facebook. We've got a bunch of articles up there already from the past weekend's races and previewing this weekend and all that good stuff. So if you want to keep up with Will's season, Sean Rahal's season, or Trevor Frank's season, or if you would like to join our team and get some great social media management and, you know, make everything look really professional and not have to worry about it yourself, give us a call and or shoot us an email, shoot us a DM, slide in our DM. yeah, thank you so much. Be sure to share the podcast. It's been doing really well recently, so that's good to see. And, yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Keep it flat out.
And talk to you next week.